Have you ever found yourself thinking ahead to when no one will be home and you can eat whatever you want or how much of whatever you want in secret without anyone to see? Maybe you wait till everyone's in bed. Or maybe you, quote, do good while you're at work when others can see. But when you get home and you're by yourself, it's a different story. And that can bring on so much shame. The same can be true of drinking. One of my most shameful things from my past has been drinking more when I'm alone than when I'm with other people. The self-loathing that breeds in the cover of darkness is intense. So today, we are peeling back the layers of shame and secrecy with a special guest, my friend and fellow life coach, Yvette Salva. We explore her story of inner turmoil of leading a life as a fitness professional on display in front of the room, while at the same time hiding painful secrets of anorexia, bulimia, alcoholism, and addiction. In this episode, we'll cover the raw reality of hitting rock bottom, feeling addicted, and struggling to break free from that shame spiral. Yvette and I cover specific steps to go from feeling addicted to food and other destructive behaviors to creating intentional systems that set you up for success. And at the root of it all is learning to love yourself on the inside first. One quick heads up, there is some adult language in this episode. I always tell you that the world needs more you, that you are meant to shine your light exactly as you are. And Yvette does that. She is New Jersey strong and brings it with some sassy language. So if you've got some little ears in the car, maybe hit pause and come back to this episode a little later. And when you do, you're in for some real talk and some major truth bombs. So are you ready to peel back the layers and break free from the shackles of shame? Oh yeah, buckle up, Buttercup. Here we go.
Do you ever feel like you know all the diet rules about eat this, but not that, and so you know what to do, but you just have a hard time actually doing it? I'm here to tell you, you are not the problem. Hi, I'm Lizzie. Welcome to the Confident Body Podcast, where we talk about all the mental and emotional parts of weight loss that diets don't tell you. It's time to step past the shame and the guilt from old diets and stop feeling like you're waiting to lose weight in order to fully participate in life. If you're ready to drop the diet mindset and learn what it takes to truly feel happy and confident in your own skin, you're in the right place. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome back. I am so glad that you are here with me today. I cannot tell you how excited I am to bring a little bit something different. This is a special guest episode today, and I have my friend, professional, amazing Yvette Salva. Let me tell you a little bit about Yvette. So she not only is a fitness professional of 35 years, mom of two, life coach, but also has an incredible story of addiction and recovery and just thriving through all kinds of adversity and things. And we're going to get into all kinds of details about how to take things and adversity in your life and make it work for you, particularly as it relates to body image, food, addiction, and things like that. So Yvette, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Lizzie. Wow, that was some intro. It's like, keep going. I can believe all that stuff you said. I need to believe it.
That's right.
I appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, so Yvette and I met through the Todd Durkin Life Coaching Certification Program, which we just finished. We had our graduation, which was incredible. But we actually met several months ago at a different event. And, you know, kind of like instantly, I was like, I think she's my kind of gal. Like, I want to get to know her better. And so Yvette, I would just love for everybody to, can you tell us a little bit more about like your background, your history? How did you get into fitness? Just tell me all the things.
All right. So my background, I started fitness at 16 years old. Okay. So I was working at this health club. I don't know if you remember back in the 80s. Well, you're a little younger than me, but they had these health clubs that were just for women, like pink carpet, little stage. And it was like, I was working the front desk and this girl, Arlene, I'll never forget it. She was like, got into an accident and couldn't make it. And they're like, Yvette, you have to teach the class. I'm like, it's 6 p.m. There's all these ladies sitting on a carpet waiting for Arlene, who's like 60 years old, and I'm 16, and they're going to want me. And they're like, you got to get up there. They gave me a cassette with Madonna. And I was like, it would be. I had the arm circles going. I was like, this is my jam. And that's where I started with group fitness. And they had not pushed me on that stage that one day. I don't know if I would have ever done it, but I loved it. I was like, this is my purpose. I want people to feel amazing. And I just felt so happy just moving my body to Madonna.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, who doesn't love Madonna, especially as us, you know, 80s girls who were growing up? Like, I swear I was in the store just like earlier today and one of those songs came on and like, it's really literally running through my head at this moment. Yeah. But tell me a little bit about, so you're in front of the class, you're teaching fitness, but I read something on your bio that kind of really caught my eye that like you had sort of this secret that you're showing women how to feel great and amazing in their bodies, maybe lose weight. And what was going on the inside for you?
Oh God. I get really emotional about this because I feel like, you know, I felt like a background girl in every fitness class, yet I was in the front.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So here I am with a bra top and the shorts and like the microphone. And I felt like complete dog crap. Before my classes, I was throwing up. Oh. After classes, I was drinking. And between all of that, I'm 54 years old. In between all of that, in my life of addiction, it was food, drugs, and alcohol. But girl, I had a six pack. I have it. I looked good. And yeah, you want some of what I have. Meanwhile, upstairs, I was a freaking train wreck. Yeah.
How did all of that develop? Like you know, if you're teaching fitness, hypothetically, like I know different because I've been there myself, but like hypothetically, if you're teaching fitness, like you've got it all figured out. What was it that led you to diets, anorexia, bulimia? You know, tell me more about that.
So I moved to this country from Spain in seventh grade, right? So I was in a British private boarding school in Spain, and I moved to America, and I am in the world of Sergio Valente jeans, makeup, Farrah Fawcett hair, and I go to my first day of school with my boarding school uniform. This is how much my parents cared. Yeah, with my little bumblebee on my like little Oxford shirt, and I was bullied. And I was bullied. I was called Bic Oreo because I'm half black. I look like I don't look like Cindy with blonde hair, and that's all I wanted to be. But as soon as I moved here and I was bullied, I just said, oh my God, I got to find a way to fit in. So the whole thing with the anorexia started with these girls. I started to see to climb up the social ladder, you had to be skinny. And I was like, I'm going to get good at that, you know? And my dad would say sometimes like, oh, I feel a little something on your side. You know, he'd tell me in Spanish, like, you're getting a little gordita. And I was like, oh, gordita, you watch. I'm going to become anorexic. Like I can remember saying those words. And, wow. You know, I'm a goal setter. And I was 68 pounds in a rehab with a tube in my stomach. Yeah. So
wow. It's interesting to hear you share that story about, you know, dad would kind of pinch your side a little bit and say, you're getting a little gordita. It's one of the things that I say frequently to my clients is like, you know, weight loss is a lot like an iceberg. You know, the what to do is that very tippy top, like, you know, drink water, you know, stop eating when you've had enough food, those kinds of things, you know, get some good sleep. The sort of like the what is that tippy top of the iceberg. And the reason why someone struggles to follow those steps is everything that's underneath. And like those steps apply to everybody, but the reasons why you struggle with it is unique to you. And so you share the story about, you know, dad saying a little something and you're like, oh, I'll show you. And I have so many clients who have some kind of story like that, whether they were bullied, mom, you know, made comments and, you know, or what will the neighbors think? And so we've got these little, either little T traumas or big T traumas or all kinds of different things that make it hard for our brains to feel safe that like, I can be okay in my body. And we're like, that's why, it's almost like we start with this foundation of like, I'm not okay. And therefore I've got to fix me. Did you ever feel that way?
Oh my God. I can share with you an experience. Oh, I have the chills because you just brought it to my head. Like, I was in gym class And, you know, they're picking teams, like this one picks and this one picks. And I was the last one left. And I remember the guy saying, "You can have her." Ugh. You know, like I was the last one left. Now they want to be on my freaking team.
Yeah, I can see why.
I will never forget. Like, "You're such a freaking loser. I don't want her. No, you take her. No, you take her. She has no value." And I think that message is what like brought me to my knees in my addiction, because I literally felt like I had no value for anyone.
Mm. And so, you know, take us through this. So you're in your teens, you're starting to teach fitness, you're throwing up before class, you're drinking after class. At some point it gets into drugs as well. And then, you know, life, I'm assuming this like progressed. At what point did it progress to a point where you're like, something's got to change?
Okay. So after the anorexia, after I graduated college, and then like, you know, anorexia has this badge of like willpower, mm-hmm. like look what you do. But let me tell you something, you can't hold on. You cannot sustain willpower. And most anorexics become bulimic because the gig is up and I'm hungry. The whole house, pancakes especially, because they're easy to come up. So that was my thing. So in college, I would go to class, then I would go teach my class at the health club, and then I would eat like pancakes, like 30, 40 pancakes, like complete numbing out of the world, and then I would throw up. And that was like all through college. Then to get rid of the prison in my head of what was food, I would drink. Because if I was drinking, I didn't have to think about food. It was just like replacing seats on the Titanic. Everything is going down. If I don't do this, then this, then that, you know? And then after college, I was an amazing saleswoman, but I lost that job because of drinking. And then I was at the gym one day, and this guy, Ivan from Russia, says to me, "Oh, Yvette, why don't you go be a shot girl at this go-go bar?" I'm like, "Go-go bar? What is that? Like, you get to go and drink with customers and like do little test tubes?" So I was like, "Ivan, you're a smart man. This sounds fantastic idea." So then I got into the nightlife. You know, it was a disaster. I was introduced to cocaine. And then I was like, "I need to marry the cartel leader today," because that shit just took away all my hunger. It made me happy and beautiful. And I said, "This I need every single day to live." And that took me to my knees. So the addiction to cocaine took me to my knees first, because I was, and there's no more money.
Okay.
Right. And then I went on to booze, tried to continue to do booze my way, but then I got clean from booze, like 12 rehabs later. But then the food was my first addiction, and it was the last to go. And I still struggle, you know, but the food is a prison that's legal and nobody can see it. It's not like cocaine, like you're 100 pounds and like you look freaking shot out. It's not like alcohol. You smell weird. You look, you start to lose things. Food is legal. And there's so much shame with women. My life depended on what I weighed, what I ate, what I exercised all day, 24/7 in my head.
Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting too, that you say like food is legal and you don't see it. I know I can understand what you mean, but I would say that a lot of my clients talk about one of the struggles with either feeling addicted to food or even just wanting to lose weight in general is like, it feels like my shame, my failure, my weakness is out on display for the whole world to see. So in some ways it's almost the opposite. Like if someone's got a drinking problem, you can kind of do that in secret. If you're doing drugs, typically you're not doing that, you know, in front of your boss. But if I have an addiction to food, or if I struggle with my weight, it is on display for everyone to see.
Oh my God. You say that and I get goosebumps, because that is true. Cause a lot of the women that I help, you know, they are overweight, 250, 300. They've tried all the things and they go, "Yvette, you don't understand where I'm coming from," right? Because I look this way and they look that way, but it is the same prison, right? Mm-hmm. It is prison. The only difference is it might be more visible on her. And, you know, I totally get that, because you know what? We have a very prejudicial society, you know? And I know a lot of my women that are overweight, they just feel like they can't be in photographs. They don't want to be put on social media. They want to wear sweats. They want to be home at night. It's just, I've lived it. Even if it looks different, it's all the same.
Yeah. So tell me about, you hit rock bottom with cocaine. You hit rock bottom with booze. And food's the only thing you got left.
Oh, can we just take a moment of silence for food? I mean, food is comfort. It just relieves you of the boredom. It's just your friend. It never, never not shows up. I mean, it helps you cope. It just releases stress. I mean, gotta say, just saying.
Yeah, that's, you know, when I was really in the throes of my weight loss journey and, you know, mental war with it, you know, you kind of look at the fitness bros and they'd be like, food is fuel. And I would be like, no, it's not. That's so not true. Food is so much more than fuel. It is, just as you said, it's comfort. It's a friend. It's traditions. It's connection. Food is a lot of things.
It really is. And, you know, it's funny because when I, I'll tell you the story later, but how I got out of the bulimia after like 36 years. But when I did get recovery from bulimia and it was like out of my life, there was such a sadness and grief because food occupied so much of my brain. Like, I don't even have friends. I don't even know, like, I don't even know what hobbies I have. Like, it was my world. So like a lot of women that I coach, they say like, I don't even know how to be with myself because I'm sad.
Yeah.
And that's how I, through my process of recovery from food.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. You know, so how did you get through?
Right, so now I'm clean and sober, right? And you guys will hear, if you guys ever want to hear my story, I'm writing a book and it's called Booze, Blow, and Pancakes.
I cannot wait for this book to come out. It is coming soon. Booze, Blow, and Pancakes, y'all.
Yeah, I want all that instant gratification right now. But the section on food, so this is the craziest story. So I had been to like, I don't know, I've been to so many. I was like the VIP treatment because I had the frequency program at Carrier Foundation. It's like a mental institution for eating drug addiction. I was in the locked unit for eating disorders, the not locked unit for back and forth. But even when I was trying to get clean, you know, I still had that addiction. So I really wasn't sober because I was not coping with drugs and alcohol, but I was coping with food. So it used to be like 10 times a day, binge purge. It became less. I got pregnant. I went again to another rehab at 35 years old with these 18-year-old girls, and I'm pregnant and I'm telling them, do you want to be sitting here when you're my age? You know, like there's something so much better. Listen now. But I went to for my bulimia when I was pregnant with my daughter, Mary Rose. And then, you know, it started to get better. Being a mom was a gift. It saved my life. And I would start to get periods of time, you know, but I wanted my recovery to be linear. You know, you can't go up, down, up, down, lasagna, no good, right? So I would get more and more time. I never got 90 days in my life, never. But I would get 10 days, I would get 30 days, I would get 40 days. I would always go back to starting over. But my daughter was probably like, I don't know, she's 20, maybe like 10 years old. And I was just so tired because on this one day, nobody was home because, you know, we're great manipulators to know when to do these dirty things, right? Oh, yeah. No one's around. And I binged on the pancakes and I threw up and I was by the toilet bowl, Lizzie, and I couldn't swallow. I had popped vessels in my eyes, but there was like, you know, that boxing bag in the back of your throat,
right?
Like there was a razor blade cutting it. And I was like, I think I need to call an ambulance. Like, I think I'm going to die. I can't swallow. It started to go down. But after that experience, I knew the gig was up. Like, I am going to die. I have really run out of options. So I confessed to my husband and I said, I really feel this urge to go to a Tony Robbins convention. You know, I want to go. Like, there's something that speaks to me. I'd always been a personal development junkie. I want to know more. I went to this Tony Robbins. It's called Unleash the Power Within.
Right.
It was 5,000 people there. He did this hypnosis and he was just like, imagine doing the same behaviors 5 years from now. And when I tell you 20,000 people like screaming from their souls, it was like, I never experienced anything like that. Then you're doing it for 10 years and 15 years. And then I saw my kids at the casket, my casket. Mom, it didn't have to end this way. And I don't know when it's like, you need to hear the message the way it needs to be heard. But I came back, I binged and purged one time after that Tony Robbins, and I never did it again.
Wow. So what, I mean, that is a hugely powerful exercise of, you know, imagine you're doing all of these behaviors today. It continues for 5 years, for 10 years, for 15 years. And then your kids are saying at your funeral, Mom, I wish you had done something different. It didn't have to be this way. That's so powerful. And so you come home and you're like, okay, I'm a changed woman. But I'm guessing that urges, desire, your old habits are still there. You probably still had like quiet moments when nobody else was around. You're like, you know, I could have some pancakes right now, or I could have some booze or whatever it was. What helped you in those moments when you're like, my brain is telling me I want to go back to that old habit because this is what we do.
For me, the biggest thing was having a recovery support network. So I go to AA, mm-hmm. but AA is also helpful for any addiction, 12 steps. I've been to OA, NA, AA, all the A's, right? But I did go to OA for a while. Mm-hmm. I had therapy and I set myself up intentionally every day for success. I think for the first year, I never came home when there was nobody home. I never came home when there was nobody home because I didn't trust myself. So I would eat at Starbucks and I would do my paperwork at Starbucks. I wouldn't come home because every time I would say, I'm not doing it today, it was always a gamble because sometimes I did. Mm-hmm. So reduce the risk of the gamble.
Okay.
I also, during that time when I was starting to get more days of not binging, I had a sponsor or like some support network where I could tell somebody if I did it, because one thing I know for sure is secrets keep you sick. Wow. And it is so sick. If I had that secret, I was not living clean. You know, I was selling people my bullshit program that I sold way back when, and I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that person, because you can fool the player. You can fool the fans, but you can't fool the players.
Yeah.
So other people who have suffered like I do, they can hear my voice and they can, are you okay? They know by my ways. So emotional support, like a network of people, setting up my day intentionally to reduce the barriers of my binging. So for nighttime was a bad thing. Like my husband would go to sleep and I would go downstairs and binge. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, Dave, can we just lock the door and don't let me leave the bedroom? Because okay. I'm sneaky. And then, so we locked the door. I mean, I had tricks for everything because I had to tell on myself. Mm. I had to tell on myself. So I did those things and I was very, very active in my self-development. Like, first of all, with food, I had to self-regulate before I would sit down at a meal, because if I'm like this charged up,
yeah,
I just my mouth, right? I would try and pause midway. Like I had a list. I would pause midway, put your fork down, because it's not just eating chicken and broccoli. It's the volume yeah. eating. You know, it could be lettuce and mustard, but I'm volume eating, you know, I'm still binging. Just okay. Even if
who eats lettuce and mustard? That sounds gross.
But even if you're trying to convince yourself of like sugar-free, low-fat, gluten-free, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then I also did exercise that I liked, not because I was trying to calories, just something I liked to do because it was pleasurable. What other thing? I always ate sitting down. That was a hard one. Because you know the calories when you're eating standing up, they don't count.
They don't count.
You gotta pass, hard pass on those. So I would physically be like, okay, my plate's in front of me. I have a beautiful plate. I'm eating off a real plate, not a paper plate. I deserve to sit down and be present and not stand up and just be in the moment and enjoy food. And one thing that also I had to do was to learn to allow myself to have some treats, but in a safe environment. Like 4 forkfuls of cheesecake is more than enough. After 4, it's not even pleasurable. You're just eating because of whatever habit, because it's comfortable, whatever. But if you take 4 forkfuls of anything, you're like, you know what? I'm good. But it's just practicing that, falling on my face, coming back, finding out why I did it, getting rid of that all or nothing thinking. And then I could start to play with like maybe half a pancake, you know, like maybe I could even eat a pancake and not throw up. I don't know. But I started to play.
Okay. I love that you said I started to play, because I really love the idea of an experimental mindset of like, let's just experiment, because that takes away some of the shame and guilt of like, I tried something and it didn't work. I suck. You know, if we just experiment, there's no way to mess it up. We're like, we're just collecting data. But I have so many questions on things you said. So we're going to like go back one by one. Okay. First of all, let's put this on a bumper sticker. Secrets make you sick. Sorry, keep you sick. Secrets mm-hmm. keep you sick. Mm. Wow. Mic drop. All right. So you set yourself up intentionally for success. What would you say to the person who lives alone? Like this person has trouble with I was good all day, but then like the stress of the day got to me and just like, I'm home by myself and, you know, I go face down in the pizza and the ice cream. And, you know, by 9 o'clock, I'm like, crap, I did it again. And I just feel awful. I feel like the shame spiral has begun. How would you help that person?
I would say they need to have a support. They need to have someone, especially at the beginning. If it's something they've been doing for years and years, and this is just how they roll, mm-hmm. they need to stop that pattern by having someone that they can check in with and be accountable to.
Okay. Okay.
Like, hey, Lizzie, it's 6 o'clock. I just got home. I'm going to take my shower. I'm going to eat dinner and shut down the kitchen and go upstairs. I'll text you tomorrow. Just that, even if you don't even talk, but you set the intention to say, this is, and even if it doesn't work for the 28th time, the 29th time might be the magic number.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's an experiment. We're just collecting data. Right.
Well, right there. Yeah. That's everywhere. We got bumper stickers and shirts everywhere.
Exactly. Okay. So you self-regulated before every meal. Number one, what did that look like? And number two, how did you remember to do that when, like, you know, you're used to just eating and eating and, like, you know, regulating before a meal is a lot different. Like, that's not something you're used to doing.
So for me, regulating before every meal just means like, okay, I have no fucking idea of what hunger feels like, what anything feels like. So me regulating my meal is like, usually 4 to 5 hours after the last time you ate, you're probably going to be hungry. But I couldn't count on my hunger signals at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
I had to go like 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 5 o'clock, snack, or something like that. Whatever works for that individual person, that's what it kind of looked like for me. Because for me, I was hungry all the time. I don't know what hunger is. I don't have any idea of anything that's going on in my body. Thirst, hunger, it's so messed up for so long. So I would say, okay. I know what I used to eat in rehab at 7 a.m., a protein, a carb, a drink, and then it's bye-bye. You know, like I had to regulate until I could start to figure out hunger signals and things like that.
Okay, so when you say regulate, it was more like figuring out your hunger signals, because what I thought you meant was before I sit down to eat, I kind of calm my mind, I calm my body. Tell me more.
Yeah, so that is 100% true. I have a plan. Uh-huh. I always plan. And I'd be like, that is so stupid. Who needs to do that? I eat the same things every day. But it's about creating a new groove in your brain, because you eat non-consciously and you don't even know what you ate. So like having a plan and then looking at my plan in the morning, writing in my journal. And then when I sit down to eat, trying not to eat while I'm cooking, trying not to eat while I'm preparing, sitting down, being mindful, eating, and then putting my stuff away and then going on to the next activity, because there was no start stop. It was just continuous. Even with the dishwasher, I'm still eating. You know, I had to get very intentional. Take a breath, slow down, put your fork down, it sounds crazy. Like I would chew my food 10 times because I didn't even know like how to chew. Gabon, big Gabon. And at a restaurant, I would chew by myself.
Tell me a little bit about what did progress look like? Because a lot of us, we're like, we want to get the A on the paper. I want to start, and my progress is a straight line. Like I used to binge, and now I don't. Did it look like that for you, Yvette?
It used to be. I used to binge. Today I binge. Today I don't. Today I binge. Today I don't. Today I binge. Today I don't. Today I binge. Don't. Like that. It was literally like 2 days on, 1 day off. Three. Until you start to get a couple more days that you're doing the behaviors you want and a couple less that you don't. But I mean, for me to get 1 day without binging, and I know for a lot of my clients, drinking wine at night, eating, that this is such a, it's such a routine. It takes a lot of time and effort. And I had to get, I'm an addict, man. It's all or nothing. Go big or go home. I do not know how to have balance gray in anything. You want a party? Let's go. Go shopping until I'm freaking credit card maxed out. Eating? I'm ready, you know? So for me to say, oh, you know, there's a stop button. There's that. That wasn't the way. It was like, I did good. And you know, like I did good today. I did bad today. All that bullshit we tell ourselves. We're not good or bad. We're just trying to learn. So one thing I did was I didn't give up. Even if I fucked up. Okay, start today. Reset your day. It could be 6 p.m. at night and you screwed up all day. Just start by drinking water. I reset my day right now at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
I don't have to wait till Monday.
How did you not, you know, so I messed up my day and it's 6 p.m. How did you not kind of just go into the shame spiral and be like, I'm a sucky human. I might as well just keep going. How did you put the brake?
I tell someone.
Okay.
Tomorrow's a new day.
Secrets keep you sick.
Tell someone because not the shame spiral keeps me going until Monday. And now I have the fuck it eating. And now I gained 5 pounds and I'm worse off than I ever was. And Monday never comes. I have to stop it in its tracks.
Right. As soon as you can. And you do that by telling somebody.
Even if it's 2 days, 3 day run, 4 day run, 2 hour run.
Okay.
I have clients who just text me. I'm just telling on myself. I had a total bender. I'm resetting my day. It's 7 p.m. at night. Awesome, Rachel. Love you. Tomorrow we start fresh.
Yeah.
That's it. You have to have hope. And all that does, it just builds your resilience. You fuck up, you get back up. Fuck up, get back up. It's just the way it is. And you become resilient.
Love it. Yeah. Mm. Okay. I have one more question about when you were talking about how you got yourself back on track. And so you said you allowed yourself to have treats in a safe way, which makes so much sense. Like, yeah, that's very logical. But a lot of us want the treats. You're laughing. You're like, what?
I'm laughing right now. Like,
so, I mean, a lot of us turn to the treats because like, I don't want to slow down. I don't want to be present. I want to check out. That's why I'm having the treat in the first place. Mm-hmm. So what helped you slow down to just have 4 bites of cheesecake?
Well, girl, first of all, I just knew I couldn't do it in my house alone.
Okay.
I have so many clients who struggle with like chocolate chips, you know, for the cookies. I need to buy the chocolate chips because we're going to make cookies tonight, right? Like I need to have ice cream for my son. Okay. All these things, but your son is not getting up at 11 p.m. and going downstairs and eating half the freaking pint and then putting it back with, you know, 2 spoonfuls left. This is what I do. I can only eat cheesecake when I'm in front of others because mama, too much. Like, I'm not going down like that. I gotta look good. I have control. So I do it when I'm in front of other people. So I can't be a total nutcase.
Okay.
There's a stop button. You can't look crazy in front of other people because I would order 5 cheesecakes. Would be like, wow, she really has been eating. You know? Yeah. You know, it's like all the clients are like, well, I had a salad at Fridays and then I came home and I ate because that's what we do in private when no one's looking. So I had to do things not in private so they could be a little bit safer.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. That's a great tip. Thank you for sharing that. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about like body image, body shame, I'm guessing, but I'd love for you to tell me, you know, did you always be like, I look pretty good and I love my body and this anorexia is how I keep it? Or like, did you hate your body? And how did that progress to where you are today?
Every single day I looked in the mirror and I hated my body. Every single day, Lizzie. I don't even remember one day I could say, it's not that bad. Never. Never. And you know what? I could pretend on the outside to feel like that, but on the inside, I never did. But what happened was when I got sober and I started to work on the inside, because I'm all about the outside. I always say I look like Gucci on the outside. You see my nice shirt? Look, Gucci. On the inside, Walmart. That's what's in here, Walmart. I don't know, Five Below. It doesn't get the dollar store, right? So what I really had to do was go inward. Like I really had to take off my lashes, my hair, my makeup, my nails, all that is Yvette, and go inside and connect with other women who felt like I did. Learn to love myself, because I don't know if any of your listeners are like me, but I am a freaking people pleaser. If there's 20 people in the room that like me, but there's one that doesn't, oh boy, I'm going after that one, because I want everyone to like me. I want to say yes to everything. I want to be everyone's best friend. And so much codependency. Like I had no idea that I could have my own voice, that I could say no to things. You know, it doesn't serve me to go to a party and watch people eat and drink. Like, not a good time for me. Mm-hmm. So today I love myself to say no. Mm. That's, you want to go get coffee and go to Barnes and Noble's, go to a yoga class, go for a walk. Let's do that. I'll tell you this. The pool gets very, I'll just stress real quick.
So if someone's listening and they're like, I hear you. I'm there. You're singing my song, but what are the steps? What is like step one of how do I go from, I look in the mirror every day and I cannot think of a single thing that I like. How do I go inward? And the first step is I gotta love me first. I don't even know what that looks like. What would you say? Okay,
so let me give you an example. So every day I wake up, I hate my body, right? And I would have like these thoughts, and I can't go from I hate my body to I love my body. It's just not possible. So it's like a ladder thought, like I have a body.
Okay.
Learn to just say I have a body. I'm not loving it. It's not what I want. I want the Kim K body, but I'm not having that today. And that's okay. I have a body. From I have a body, I'm strong. From I have a body, I'm strong, I'm fit. Right?
Yeah.
And from I have a body, I'm strong, I'm fit, I'm more than my body. This is just the packaging for my soul. You know, this is just the home that holds everything in. Because really, it doesn't matter this outside. It's what's inside. You know, how can I show up as a mom? You know how many moms I know won't get in pictures?
Oh my gosh, so many.
Cool. Like that was me. Like I never got in my, I have a pool and I never went in with my kids because it doesn't matter. I didn't feel like I was worthy of wearing a bathing suit. So they never saw me get in there. Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to a client who said, you know, my boys are whatever they were, 14 and 16 now, and they're going to grow up one day and they'll have no pictures of their mom when they were little. And like, they don't care what I look like. They love me. But I was never in the pictures when the kids were little. And, you know, I'm starting now, even though I don't like the way I look, they don't care. They love me. And one day I'm going to be gone and I want them to be able to have a memory of me. And it's just such a tragedy that so many of us hold ourselves back from participating in our lives because we think that we're not good enough. Our bodies aren't right the way they are. And like, you know, just like you said, fuck that. Who gets to say what's right with your body? Like you do.
But you know, the social norms like today, like growing up the way I grew up, you know, Beyonce and Drake, they weren't big at the time, right? Heather Locklear, the blonde bombshell. That's not today. We have all these different ethnicities. It's cool, right? It's cool to be that. But it's also very, like if I had social media at 14 years old and say, how am I going to have a 20-inch waist and a 40-inch ass? I mean, how is that even? It doesn't even like structurally make sense. But this is what these little girls are looking at. The eyebrows, the lashes, the lips, the waist, the butt. I mean, it's bought. It's not even real. Like, it's bought. And they're thinking, what can you do to look like that? And my mom makes $20,000 a year as a waitress. How am I going to look? It's not even something that's conceivable. And it makes me sad. It makes me sad because a lot of the kids that train in my studio, they're just head down, big sweatshirt, you know? Mm-hmm. Makes me real sad.
Yeah. And so loving yourself first starts with knowing that the bodies that we get to walk around in are just the vehicle. They're just the case of what's inside.
And practicing new thoughts. Like, it's hard. It's like a dress. Do I want to wear this one today? Or do I want to wear this one today? I'm a fat, ugly pig. Or how about, you know what? Yvette, you're actually a kind of cute girl today. Wear some lipstick. Stop hiding. Like, trying to practice a new thought. Very hard.
Yeah.
But it's like in the record. Even if you don't believe it. Like, I'm kind of cute today. Like, just trying it. Just keep trying on that dress and saying, yeah, you know what? I'm going to try. Because that's another thing with women. They have size 2 to size 22, right? Yeah. And if they're size 22, they're not doing it. But like, even if you're in the 22 today, I look kind of cute. Like, it's a thought that we could start to practice.
And the crazy thing that always gets me is like, whether you are thinking to yourself, I'm a fat pig, or I look kind of cute today, you look the same to every person who sees you. And so the only difference in your experience is what's going on between your two ears. So why not set yourself up for success? And even if I look cute today is not something that you feel like you can reach, that's just like not at all true. Start exactly with what Yvette said. Like, I have a body. Go to neutral. Like,
go.
I'm a human.
Because, you know, I'm a personal development junkie. And, you know, I should have all the answers by now, Liz. I've spent thousands of dollars on this stuff. But one thing that I've heard and I've practiced and I know is your thoughts create your feelings and your feelings create your results. And when that stuck in my head, Brooke Castillo, I don't know where I heard that from, a podcast or something, but I was like, your thoughts, I look like a fat pig today. What kind of feeling is that going to give me?
Right.
Defeated.
Right.
And what action and result I'm going to take? Fuck it. I'm going to keep eating.
Right.
Right. So if my thought is like, I kind of look cute today, makes me feel a little punchy, a little, you know, happy, a little hopeful. Mm-hmm. And then my action and result will be like, I'm going to wear a cute dress and not hide in big sweats and maybe put a little makeup on. My action will support the feeling. So it's really, that is so true. And when I started to practice new thoughts, I would actually write them down. Mm-hmm. Because my old thought is I feel like a fat pig. That feeling would always be defeated and the action would be like, fuck it, eat more.
Yeah.
So I started to new thoughts and writing them down, man.
Yeah. That's why I say, like, feeling good, even in just the tiniest little ways, is the fuel for motivation. It is like putting gas tank in your motivation car. If you want any prayer of continuing to keep going, you've got to give yourself as many chances as you can to feel good. And even if it's that, like, my whole day was a shit show, but I did actually eat what I planned for breakfast today. Okay, focus on that. Yeah.
Total win. And I think women don't know how to appreciate or like celebrate themselves. Like, I don't know how to celebrate myself. Honestly, I'm a workaholic. So now I'm on the new Titanic with the new. And I'm like, well, I didn't do this. This didn't get this many people. It's like, it's so crazy to be in my brain. It's like a bad neighborhood, get robbed every freaking day. But I need to start saying like, wow, you are getting success. You know, like you change people's lives. It doesn't have to be thousands. It could be two, it could be one.
Yeah.
Like, just celebrating. Like, I didn't want to come on this podcast. I'm like, oh, look at it. I got pimples and wrinkles, Liz. It's a bad combo. I'm like, oh, I got it. And all the things in my head. And then I'm like, just be yourself. Show up, honor the word to yourself, show up.
Amazing. Yeah. There was one last topic that we had discussed earlier that I would love to really circle back to is that you're a mom of two and being a mom, like that'll rock your world. And so how would you address like that kind of that guilt of taking care of, you know, two other humans and taking care of all the things. And just like you said, like inside your brain, it's a dumpster fire sometimes. Like, how do you allow yourself to take care of you? How do you allow yourself to almost be like, I am important and it's okay for me to take care of me when there are other needs out there that my family has?
Do you want to know the one secret nobody knows?
Yes, please.
The calendar. Okay. That bad boy, you got to block time. I don't care if everyone's sleeping. I don't care if it's at the end of the night. I don't care if it's during the day, but you have to block time. You need to decide ahead of time. At 12 o'clock, I'm going to yoga or taking a break and going for a walk. And then when it's 12 o'clock, you honor it. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't plan to take time out for yourself, you will never do it. As a mom, I will do everything for everyone. I can't go to that. I got to do the dishwasher. I got no, he's got soccer. He's got that. You know what? You can find time. And it doesn't have to look like 5 hours of exercise a week.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like I find time every morning. I get up at 4, my first client's at 5. I write in my journal those intentional thoughts so that I can practice new thoughts. I drink my water. I eat a healthy breakfast. I get dressed, make up everything in my home to train someone because this is what sets me up to feel good. Even and every day I don't want to do it. Every day I want to press snooze. I'm the most disciplined, laziest motherfucker ever. I never want to do it. But I know that if I start my day right, the chances of it trickling through till that 7 p.m. witching hour starts how I start it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you.
So sorry. I swear all the time. I can't stop.
Hey, just as we talked about before we got on this call, you know, I was like, one of my things is I want everyone to like, we need more of you. You know, fill in your name. The reason why you came to this earth is to be God through the lens of your eyes. And so if you know, the lens of Yvette is swearing and New Jersey, awesome, like bring it, be you. So be you. Yeah. Is there anything that I didn't ask or anything else that you would like to share?
I would like to share that I hope every woman that's hearing this today got something out of it. And if I can in any way help them with drugs, Xanax, drinking wine at night. You know, we soften it. We soften the blow. It's I'm only drinking. I'm a wine mom. But in your gut, in your intuition, you're like, I think I'm drinking too much. I'm popping too many pills. You know, I really feel like I'm a food addict. Every day I say I'm going to start and I don't. I need help. Reach out to me. I can give you resources. Just even telling on yourself. To someone who's been there.
Yeah.
To start here. I will be open for anyone. And when my book comes out, you want to laugh a little bit, booze, blow, and pancakes, that'll be on Amazon. And I just hope I touched one person that can say, man, I feel that way.
Amazing. Yeah. And I can vouch for Yvette. Not only is she an amazing fitness trainer, but she's an amazing life coach. And so anybody who is thinking, I don't know if Yvette can help me, but I think I need help. Absolutely reach out. So speaking of which, how can people learn more about you?
So everything is Yvette Salva Fitness, Instagram, Facebook, website, but also I have a YouTube video and on YouTube, I have 10 in 10, which is 10 exercises in 10 minutes
nice.
For busy moms who are like, oh, I don't have weights. There's body weight. There's 5 pound dumbbells. There's band. There's all kinds of different. And you're like, I don't know where to start. Start with 10 minutes. Okay. Even if you press play and you did one bicep curl, it's more than you ever did. So just try that. Or, you know, I just think that my social media is all about helping women. Everything I put is like either to make you laugh or a tip or a trick or something that's going to make you feel inspired. And I'd love to see you on the gram.
Amazing. All right.
Yvette, it has been such a gift to me to get to know you. I'm so grateful that our paths have crossed, that God has kind of brought ourselves into each other's sphere. I think that, you know, like I said, the first time I met you in person, I was like, there's a kindred spirit. There's somebody I got to get to know better. So I'm just so grateful for you being you, and continue to shine your light.
And you too. And thank you for having this podcast to help other women so that they don't have to feel alone.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
So there you have it. Thank you for listening to my interview and conversation with my friend and fellow life coach, Yvette Salva. Her book, Booze, Blow, and Pancakes, should be out later this summer. We may have her back as a bonus episode when her book is ready to go. And here as a quick recap. So remember, your thoughts create your feelings, and therefore it's so important to intentionally set yourself up for success. And you can do that by thinking your thoughts on purpose. Choose the thoughts you want to think each day, kind of like the way you choose your clothes. And also, try self-regulating before a meal. Calm your mind, calm your heart, your soul, your body. As you get ready to eat, settle down, sit down. Choose exercise that you like and allow yourself to have treats in a safe way. And number one, or overall of that, is secrets keep you sick. So have someone that you can reach out to when you are struggling, when you have a mess up, when you feel like, oh, I blew it again. Progress comes in all kinds of little ways. And maybe that's just starting with you had a few extra hours between binges today than you did yesterday. It all starts somewhere. Reach out to someone who can help. And so your tiny confident body action step today is, who is someone you can talk to? Who is someone you can just have an accountability with and say, I'm struggling. I'm going to reset. It's 6 o'clock. I'm going to reset my day today. Maybe that's Yvette. Maybe that's me. Maybe that's your partner. Anything helps. We all are in this together. It takes community. So your number one action step today is to find someone who you can count on to talk to when you feel like you are at the bottom. And of course, before we go, remember, love yourself, because secrets keep you sick. There is no shame so awful, so bad, that can take away your worthiness. You can get out from underneath the shame shawl one step at a time, and it starts with looking inside and loving yourself, because you are worthy, you are enough, and you are meant to shine your light exactly the way you are. All right, that's what I've got for you this week. I will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening today. Seriously, I know it's not a small thing, and I genuinely appreciate it, and I hope it helped you. Make sure you head on over to confidentbody.coach/tips and sign up for my 7 top tips for little shifts that create big results so that you can start feeling confident in your body right now. I will see you next week, and until then, remember, you are a miracle.